were involved in the West, at a time that the West German government was carrying on public relations.
Council, it's the West German government, had invited over, were invited over a group of church and synagogue people. And they asked the Council of Jewish Women to recommend a woman to be part of that group. And I was recommended by the president of our organization, Mrs. Louise Kahn. I was then an assistant secretary of council or something.
You're talking about the national
And I went to Germany for 4 weeks.
Oh, how fantastic.
It was the most exciting and thrilling experience I think that anyone could have. There were three Jews, a rabbi from Detroit, Isaac Frank, who was the director, the executive of the Greater Jewish of the Jewish Community Relations Council of Greater Washington, and myself. There were, I think, four or five Protestants and four or five Catholics. We were all together in Bonn.
Were you the only woman?
No, I was the only Jewish woman. We were all together in Bonn for a week for briefing, both by the West German government and by our own embassy. And then we went our separate ways. The Protestants went to the Protestant parts of Germany, the Catholics to the Catholic parts, and we three Jews went to the communities that had any kind of a sizable Jewish community. We were in Frankfurt, and from Frankfurt we went to Munich, and from Munich we went to Berlin. All of us got were together in Berlin, the whole traveling group. And we were in Hamburg and then Dusseldorf. And in each of these communities there were remnants of the Jewish community. Very interesting thing was the fact that there were very few natives. These were people who had come from other parts. But you're not here to get this whole story.
I'm interested in what the German government was trying to...
They were trying to promote a better understanding of what their attitudes were and how they were trying to reestablish themselves as part of a civilized world.
And they were trying to win the support of large organizations.
And to show that they were trying to compensate and to atone for the Hitler era and to show that all Germans weren't like Hitler.
Now, the three of you then, were you accompanied by one person the whole time?
No. We were given the names of leaders in the Jewish communities. And so we would get in touch with them. Now, the Christians, that had been much better set up than ours because their central groups did. Ours, since it was the first time, and I think the only time that this ever happened, the central Jewish community hadn't done anything. But we did meet with all the outstanding people.
And you say most of them were not Germans?
No, I said they were Germans, but they didn't come from their, weren't living in their native cities, their cities of birth. The only place where we really found great numbers of non-German Jews was in Munich. This was the hardcore of the Jews who didn't want to leave Europe. And also the stateless ones where they couldn't find any papers. A lot of Polish Jews, a lot of Eastern European Jews, whose papers had been lost. There were no records about them. So they couldn't get passports anywhere, visas to go anywhere. And many of them who were reluctant to go anywhere. I've met in various places German Jews who had gone to Israel and who returned to Germany a lot who had been in the United States and returned to Germany. Those who returned to Germany from the United States were those who were never able to learn the languages, never able to adjust. Those who had gone to Israel and pioneered life for some of these gently bred women.
There was just some who couldn't adjust to life outside.
Who couldn't adjust to the hardships of the pioneer life. And I've often thought, I suppose when I had been in my 50s or 60s, and I were to be expelled from the United States, how could I make a life for myself? I have no skills.
Wait a minute, no artisan skills?
I can't work with my hands. My professional training, I couldn't practice law anywhere. I mean, as a result of what I did at the Guild, I could.
Yes.
But in the 50s, Milton would have been lost.
That's true. Imagine the difficulty.
That's right. For professional people, look at the difficulties doctors have.
Right.
Had. But this isn't on that. This is a totally different kind of thing. But those 4 weeks were very, very exciting. Vix was terribly proud of it. And I was told by his teachers that he would bring my letters and my cards to share and to read to the class.
Well, this was
an
excellent opportunity.
On this kind of thing. He was, he's always been very pleased and proud of his parents, and he has never acted like so many children whose parents have been very involved in organizations. He never felt deprived. He never resented organizations. And I have friends whose parents, whose mothers or fathers have been active, and their feeling about organization, their feeling that they had been deprived of certain things because of their parents' activities. Vix never felt that way.
And he is
the same kind of active person that we are. He's interested in these things.
Yes.
So then?
You came back from this trip. Did you visit the concentration camps?
Yes,
as well?
I was at Dachau and I was at Bergen-Belsen. Very, very bad. Very painful. And it was an interesting thing. Every German that you met thought, well, what were you doing during this time?
Couldn't help it.
You couldn't help it. And every day was an emotional day where you hit peaks and valleys constantly of great joy and great sorrow. But it was a magnificent experience.
Oh, it must have been. And when you came back, I'm sure you shared this experience.
Spoke about it quite frequently. The Sun Telegraph ran a series of articles that I had written at their request.
Was this in 1957?
In 57. It would be probably in June. And then the Post-Gazette had a... this is when Al Rosensweig really met us, and first time that he had met us before, first time he was in our home when he came up to interview me and have a picture taken. So this was the big thrill of my life, and I was the fair-haired girl of the National Council of Jewish Women. And my report to them was shared broadly and widely, even with Senator Javits. And I make a point of that to show you how mercurial things are. I was supposed to go on to be a vice president of the council. By that time, I had begun to have sort of second thoughts of this idea of being away so much. Bix was getting to be 12, 13 at that time. And beginning to have some problems. He who had been the key child in the core group all of a sudden was very peripheral and having problems. He was going up to Alderdice, and his adjustment to Alderdice was not, he wasn't happy there. He wasn't part of the of the group anymore.
And he had been.
Oh, he was the big wheel. Whatever the cause was, and I've never been able to determine why, we've never asked. And it reminds me when you said something yesterday to me about why I didn't fight back on that civilian defense thing.
Yeah.
And I began thinking about it. Milton and I, and you said you were so surprised because I'm a fighter. Milton and I can fight for everybody and every cause, but when it comes to fighting and demanding for ourselves or our child, we cannot do it.
It must be part of the training.
we just cannot do these things. Just like with Bix, I couldn't do what other mothers did. See to it that my son was invited into a fraternity. And you know many mothers work that out.
I understand that.
And I can't do that kind of thing. Bix was not an athlete. We discouraged the football. We didn't believe in this super unsupervised football business with kids. He also, he was not brought up in a permissive kind of an atmosphere. He was brought up in a free atmosphere, but not a permissive. He was free to express his opinion, to do whatever he wanted. For instance, he was permitted to go to Gettysburg by himself. He was a Civil War buff. He was permitted to go to Gettysburg by himself when he was 13 years of age. He had been there with us before. We felt confidence in that kind of thing. But he was not permitted to be out until 1 and 2 and 3 in the morning when he was 14 and 15. He was not permitted to have the car when he was 16 running every second. These were the things, about which we had certain rules and regulations. He was not given the unlimited amounts of money. He was not permitted to be out during the school week.
Were these rules similar to the ones enforced when you were growing up in your home? When he was growing up?
Pretty much so, yes. Yes.
It sounds different, but there was a freedom of expression with certain standards.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Very definitely. Well, he and Butler, I wasn't made to feel in the odd child eye, because this was pretty typical of the mores of Butler. But in freewheeling, permissive Squirrel Hill,
it was a little harder to keep us.
No, it wasn't. It was harder to keep the standards. It was harder on the child. It wasn't hard for us. It was hard for Bix and hard on him. He became an oddball.
And stronger for people.
And he also, he was never brought up that guided the means. He was not brought up that to get an A under any circumstances, so long as you got an A.
I would imagine not.
He was not brought up to cheat, and he wasn't brought up to brown nose and these kinds of things. So, he didn't fit into that milieu. I think a lot of it now, too, when he's recognized, because we get feedback from kids who had been at school with him. And they ask about him so glowingly. I think that Bix retreated more than he needed to have retreated.
He was probably respected, but didn't feel comfortable.
Well, I think that he exaggerated in his own mind his rejection. And he pulled back more than he needed.
But you were concerned about it at the time.
Oh, very definitely. Oh, who couldn't be? Who wouldn't be? But we were never on his back about it. We tried to compensate for it in other ways.
Well, and one of the ways you tried to compensate was to change your goals, your relationship in council, in national affairs.
No, well, that was part of it. But Milton wanted me to go on. For the first time in my life, I became involved in a political crunch. I never, as I told you yesterday, I never had to work for anything. things came very easily and readily to me. I never had to plan, how am I going to get it? What kind of this and that kind of thing? What kind of tactics to use? I never had to line up people, you know, supporting. And for whatever anything I was elected to in council, we never politicked. The Pittsburgh section never went in for politics. And I was very naive about a lot of these things. I mean, friends are friends. People say they like you. People say they respect you. You believe them.
So what was this political?
There was a gal from Detroit who wanted the vice presidency. She had been my assistant. I had a secretary, and she wanted to jump over. And it was devastating as far as I was concerned. I was totally crushed. Crushed because of my feeling of loss of relationships. How could people who were friends do this to you?
This was something new in your experience.
Oh yes, I've never had this. And you know, it really isn't right. It's a dreadful thing to live until you're 50 and to encounter your first disappointment. Because you have no defenses. You don't know how to handle it. You don't know how. I didn't know how to handle disappointment. And it wasn't so much disappointment about the office. It was the loss of faith.
That's most interesting. This was in
1959. As a result, I began to be distrustful of everybody. I didn't believe anybody, and I pulled back. And I, just in talking to you now for the first time, I'm aware this is probably what happened to our Bix, where he went through this kind of thing. And just as I pulled back from relationships,
he did it at a much younger
age. He did it. And he, well, in talking with him, so Bix had it, but in talking with Bix, not too long ago, about his experience, I've never related him my experience and my feelings.
Does he know about...
He knew about that part, yeah. I mean, he knew about it when it happened, but we've never discussed it again. But he was saying to me, you know, Mom, I think that having those things happen to me at that time was very helpful. I had to learn to rely upon myself and to look into myself. And I developed certain strengths as a result of it. And I think that happened to me and really opened up new avenues for me.
So here at the age of 50, you were began to look in new directions.
Yes, and it only serves to strengthen my feeling that whatever happens, it seems to be so awful, had much good to it. Because it was a result of that I pulled out of organization work. I didn't want to practice law. I was looking for something to do. I had to have something to do.
Certainly.
And so I remembered the fact that I had my training, my bachelor's was in education. So I went down to the Board of Education and spoke to John Schaefer, who was a friend of mine in charge of personnel. And I started teaching at Chenley High School that fall of 1960. The fall of 1959. Oh, because this happened in the spring of 59.
Sure, they probably
this happened in the spring of 59. It was in 59 that I started teaching at Chenley High School. So I pulled myself out of it as quickly as possible because I knew I had to. Because I had been in a real state of depression. Terrible depression.
Well,
I cried readily. I taught social studies, history to 10th graders, and social studies to 9th graders, and Milton made me stop that because I was working 24 hours a day. I was anguishing for these young people at the age of 14 and 15 being fated before life had even been started for them. And these were rejects from Central Catholic High School. They were the whites as well as the blacks. And some of the unrealistic goals, this business of pushing for college, 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 for kids who really couldn't be college. And the idea that if you didn't go to college, you were nothing. This was after the Sputnik deal, you know, yes. When everything was being geared to education. And I found that teaching that ninth grade social studies, I felt so hypocritical. I was talking to them, the home, the community, and the church and all that. These middle American values to which these people had never been exposed, and the hypocrisy of the whole thing.
It bothered you.
I was anguished. I felt guilty every time I tried to talk to them about some of these things, because I teach thought through discussion. It's interesting, as much as a talker as I am, in the teaching situation, it was a discussion. Well, you remember what it was like when I had you. It was, well, what do you think? If that kind of thing.
And we all spoke up and did things. You made us think.
And this is the way I did it. After I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't eating, and Milton made me stop. And I did substitute teaching for a while, which is a most unsatisfactory thing. Because there, too, I just couldn't go and be a babysitter.
No.
I had to, being paid for something, you do it. And also the idea of not being able to plan any kind of a day, of waiting for every day, not knowing. And one of my sisters happened to read, she loves to read the want ads, and she sees this ad for a part-time job, because I only wanted a part-time job, in a small private school that was just opening. So I answered the ad, a blind ad, and it isn't funny. And forgot about it because I'd been here for several weeks. Must have been 4, 5, 6 weeks past. And then I received a call. And I went over the interview, and it was the Greater Pittsburgh Guild for the Blind.
Now, how long that began that in Pittsburgh in 1960?
61. And I had 3 interviews and was finally selected to be as a staff member. I had to be at in-service training. I had a week of intensive in-service training, but I still had not yet learned to be an employee. And at the time, I had placed a condition. I had been asked to be chairman of the resolutions committee for the National Council of Jewish Women, which was having its national convention in Pittsburgh. They had done an awful lot of things, I must say, to try to get me back on the board.
Yes.
And I'd been offered all kinds of things. And I had been asked to run, my name had been suggested coming in from all over the country through offices. But Florence Goldsmith was on the national board at that time. And I knew that they wouldn't elect 2 people from Pittsburgh at the same time. And I felt that I couldn't do that to Florence. I wouldn't want it done to me.
It had been done to you.
Well, I mean, and I couldn't do it to anybody else. And I kept refusing to run. And then they asked me to be national chairman of this, which is the plum assignment for a national convention. And so I told Dr. Connor that I would have to be the national convention was in Pittsburgh, and I would have to be absent for the times when I was making my presentation. Well, I ended up by missing most of the sessions. Why they kept me, why they didn't fire me right then and then, I don't know. But this was the most exciting kind of a concept. It was a totally new concept where the rehabilitation or training of newly blinded adults, based upon the fact that although a person could lose sight, but he still retained all of his remaining senses, and it was a matter of retraining his remaining senses. And he also had this other big plus that he had built up over a lifetime, scores of experiences
That would be drawn on.
That would be drawn on, and be using his, and there would be substitutive techniques, and it would be the use and the training of all of the senses.
Was this a new concept?
A totally new concept. It had been started by, developed by a priest from Boston who had, whose assignment in the diocese had been care, had been for the blind, and he had been a chaplain in World War I. And when he was in these hospitals and he saw these various things, he came up with these concepts. It's had a tremendous impact upon the whole field of blindness. Father Carroll contends that an adventitiously blinded adult suffered 20 losses. And these losses were psychological losses as well as skill losses, and that there could be substitution or restoration of these losses. And Gordon Connor had been with Father Carroll in Boston. Gordon had become interested in blindness because his third child was a retrolental fibroplasia child who had been blinded by too much oxygen. And he had become involved, totally involved and committed to blindness. And he had been with Father Carroll when Father Carroll started the first rehab agency at that time in Boston, and then Father Carroll came here, Bishop Wright, who had been in Western Mass and was familiar with this. Bishop Wright brought Gordon Connor. Gordon Connor had been a classmate of his.
Oh, I see. Now, was this a national?
No, this is local. And we had to develop our own courses. Gordon didn't tell us one blessed thing about what had been done in Boston. We had to develop them. And I was originally started working part-time, just in the mornings. And I was to teach Braille and techniques of daily living and a course in memory.
Did you know Braille?
No. He didn't want anybody. I had taken a course from Lillian Freehoff in Braille when I moved into Pittsburgh. And I was working on my manuscript at the time I came down with measles. This was just before I became council president. I never completed the manuscript. And, you know, a skill unused is a skill lost. And so I didn't know any Braille. This was some 18 years later. And 15 years later. And they didn't want, a requisite for employment at that time was that you knew nothing at all about blindness. You had never been around blind people. So that you didn't have stereotypes. Well, this is the way blind people do things. So I had to teach myself Braille, but I also had to teach it, you know, by touch. And I was five letters ahead of the trainee, five alphabet letters ahead.
Sometimes that works the best.
And I mean, and I had to give them feedback as to what they should be experiencing and the feeling, and I had developed my own techniques. And then for techniques of daily living, this was, what would a blind person do? What does a person, how would a blind person go through a day? And for about 3 or 4 weeks before this, I started keeping a record of everything I did from the minute I got up in the morning until I went to bed at night. And I kept it for about 3 weeks to make certain that I had every activity. And then I planned our meals around different kinds of foods. And my housekeeper, I had Bessie Smith, who was with us from the time Bix was five until Bix was 17. Bess did the cooking and the serving, of course. And I sat blindfolded at our dinner table, experimenting with different ways. How would a blind person eat? How would a blind person cut this? How would a blind person handle Jell-O? How would a blind person handle pie? How would a blind person handle lettuce and spaghetti?
So you became totally involved.
Oh, sure. Oh, you had to. Every staff member has to, because you have to be able to give feedback to the trainee. And how can you give feedback unless you know what it is? So I developed that course, and I'm very, very proud of the fact that the things that I have done there, my techniques are being used, an adaptation of it, practically everywhere in the country now. Because
the word was carried around. Is the rehabilitation center still in operation here?
Yes, it had been on Center Avenue. That was where we first started, mm-hmm. right across from the Shadyside Hospital. And then in 1966, we moved out to Bridgeville. Our current director, Leon Reed, wanted to become very expansive, and costs of building here in Pittsburgh were prohibitive. And Universal Cyclops had built a new office building, and they offered us this building for $100,000. They took a tax write-off, of course, for the rest. And we moved out to Bridgeville, and I was very unhappy about it, but I moved. I was there until January of 1973 when I retired.
But you started part-time. It wasn't really part-time, it was at home all day, too.
Yeah, I mean, because you become so absorbed in the thing. But it was an exciting kind of a thing. And it was a therapeutic community, and we were psychologically oriented and geared, and I learned so much.
There was a whole new direction to your life then.
It was so tremendous, so tremendous. I do feel, though, that everything I had done prior to my coming there